Hello, everyone, and welcome to Million Dollar Decorating, the only podcast devoted to the worlds of design, decorating, and beautiful living. I'm your host, James Swan, and I am thrilled to have you subscribing to our show today. Remember to head over to our website, milliondollardecorating.com, where you can learn more about our family of design enthusiasts, add your name to our email list, then follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. You'll be part of all the great things that we have going on. And the really great thing that's happening right now is that I get to introduce you to our guest today. Before making the decision, more than 10 years ago, to pursue his lifelong passion of design, he was a successful New York City attorney. Then, moving forward in time, he founded his East Hampton-based design firm that specializes in thoughtfully designed residential interiors, custom furnishings, and residential development. Whether he's designing a summer retreat in the Hamptons, a family home in Los Angeles, or a loft apartment in Lower Manhattan, he creates comfortable, stylish, and distinguished spaces that reflect his clients' personalities and lifestyle. In addition to the firm's commissioned interior design projects, he designs and manages every aspect of the development of highly coveted estate homes in the Hamptons. Turns out, he's quite busy making the world more beautiful. Dan Scotti, welcome to Million Dollar Decorating.
Thanks, James. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you with us today, Dan. Take us back and tell us the story of your sort of circular route to getting to the career that you're in today. When did you first fall in love with design, and what was the path like leading up to now?
You know, as you mentioned in the intro, it's been a bit of a career change for me, but I've always been passionate about design for as long as I can remember. When I was a child, my parents would do renovations on their home, or they would be decorating an addition to the house, and I was just always involved at every step of the process. But while I was being educated, I was looking for stimulation intellectually, so I pursued a career in law. But I never really lost that passion for design, and found myself as a sort of a hobby. On the weekends, I would buy homes and renovate them and decorate them. Sometimes I'd keep them for a few years. Other times I'd sell them. When we would take on additional space for the law firm, I'd get excited that I'd have an opportunity to express myself creatively. So I was sort of working, as I was practicing law, I was designing in my own free time. And then I guess about 10 years ago, I finally decided to make the career switch and pursue my passion for design full time.
That's a pretty bold move for anyone at any point in life, but two careers that are, at least on the surface, very, very different. What was that like? Was it a scary transition, or was it just the right thing to do?
You know, I got to a point in my life where it was just the right thing to do. I remember I was sitting having lunch with a friend one day, and, you know, I accomplished what I had set out to accomplish professionally as an attorney. And I was doing fairly well financially, and I was comfortable with where I was in life, but I wasn't satisfied creatively. So I remember my friend said to me, who knows me very well, he said to me, "Would you be happy if you pursued this life of design, this new career path, and you made half as much money? Would you be fulfilled? Would you be happy, and would you feel successful in your life?" And I thought to myself for a moment, I'm doing it for free right now on the side, on the weekends, in my free time. So if I can figure out a way to make a business out of it and keep it going, then nothing could be better for me.
Well, and it seems like it's turned out pretty well. 10 years later, you've got a thriving career, a great business going. What were those first years like? Was it going from owning and running one type of a business, or being involved in the running of a business, and then shifting gears to a different industry completely? What was that transition like?
Well, it's an excellent question. It was a bit of a learning curve on the construction side of things, because when I first started my business in design, I bought some properties in the Hamptons and designed homes, developed them, and then furnished them in part to make them more marketable and more pleasing to prospective buyers. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening was the people who purchased the houses from me wanted to either buy all the furnishings or they wanted to hire me to finish them, to do the interior designs and finish the vision for the home that I had created from the outset. So I was pursuing real estate development in part to satisfy my creative outlet, but it ended up becoming a full-time gig, the design side of things.
Nice. And you're still doing the development also, right?
I am. I do both. I do just straight up interior design projects where I'm hired as a designer to do a home that's been previously purchased or built by someone else. Then I also purchase land, design, create a vision for the property, design a home, oversee the construction, finish the interiors, and sell the home. And then the third sort of bucket of activity for my business is I work with clients collaboratively designing homes specifically for them. I'm actually working on a couple of projects right now where they've purchased property and then hired me to come in and design a house, oversee the construction, and finish the interiors, which is the most fun.
Right. You get to touch on all three of those buckets in one project, right?
Exactly. And then you also get the gratification of designing something for a family that you get to know over time.
Exactly. Now, does that development work, is that strictly in the Hamptons? Or like your design work, do you take that elsewhere in the country?
So far, the development work has been focused on the Hamptons, Hampton, Wainscott area, Sagaponic. The interior design work has taken me to Los Angeles and to New York City. But thus far, the development has been based here in the east end of Long Island. I have thought about doing a couple of projects in Los Angeles. I spent about 4 months in LA doing a project a year and a half ago, and I did look at some property out there, and it's something that's sort of been in the back of my mind.
Well, we'll stay tuned and see how that unfolds.
That sounds good.
So what are the projects that you're working on right now that have you pretty juiced up and excited?
You know, I'm super excited about a project I'm working on in East Hampton. It's a custom home that I've designed for a young family that it's on an acre and a half. And it was inspired by the old farmhouses that you see in Wainscott and in Sagaponic. Very simple. They call it a five-bay farmhouse, where you have a door in the center, a center hall farmhouse, and then you have five windows across the top and then two flanking the front door on either side. But we needed significantly more square footage than a traditional farmhouse would give you. So I've designed the house to look like it's expanded over time as the family grew. So let's say the house was built at the turn of the century, then maybe 10 or 15 years later, they would add on a wing, and then they would add on a guest cottage, and then the guest cottage gets connected to the main house. One of the things that I'm really excited about with this project is that I'm able to incorporate some modern industrial elements into the design of the facade. For example, there's structure that's the guest cottage is connected to the main house by a blackened steel and glass breezeway, which it filters light into the spaces, and it just adds an industrial element to the design. And then if we flip to the interiors, I'm incorporating a number of vintage elements to bring in texture and to give the house that comfortable lived-in feel. For example, reclaimed oak flooring and hand-brushed painted surfaces, vintage industrial hardware, mid-century lighting. All of these things are being incorporated into the interior finishes of the home.
Do you find that there are a certain set of expectations that homeowners who are looking to build in that part of the country bring to a project, or is it pretty much a clean slate when you begin to create something unique and special for them?
It really depends upon the client, but in the last few years, I've had a number of clients that have approached me specifically because of the type of work that I've done in the past. They're typically looking for an open floor plan, a kitchen with higher ceilings with light that filters in throughout the day, connection between the interior spaces and the outdoor spaces, the pool, a pool house / cabana. So if we're talking about the architecture and the site plan, they're typically looking for that Hamptons lifestyle, where they can feel that there are large enough spaces where the family can congregate and be together, yet not feel like they're on top of each other.
Sure. And does that spill over then into the design work also? Are there preset expectations?
It does very much so. I tend to gravitate towards things that are very comfortable and soft to the touch. Vintage industrial, vintage Belgian linen I'll use to reupholster the upholstered pieces. And they're looking for interiors that are not too fussy. So many times I'll use an outdoor fabric on a family room sofa or a media room sofa so that they don't have to be overly concerned about, spilling a glass of wine. Yes, they are looking for spaces that are comfortable yet not too fussy.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense in that part of the world. Definitely does. So when you think about the business as it exists today, Dan, and maybe as you're envisioning it growing into the future, what's the very best part of the work that you get to do right now?
I think I've touched on it a little bit, but one of the things that I take most enjoyment from, and I think I'm also pretty good at, is incorporating those vintage industrial elements into new construction so that the homes don't feel like they're new construction. Mm-hmm. They feel like they've been there for 100 years. And that would be the reclaimed oak flooring that I tend to use in my homes, the hand-painted surfaces. I scour the flea markets and the salvage shops for hardware that I can incorporate into homes. This house that I was just talking about a few minutes ago in East Hampton, I found these oversized bronze door handles that were going to flip sideways and use as hooks in the mudroom. Mm-hmm. And I found at a salvage shop in New York City, industrial shelving units that were mounted in a hallway of a school in New York City that was demolished several years ago. And we're going to use this in the pool house changing room to stack towels and to hang wet bathing suits, et cetera.
Nice.
So it's these elements that I enjoy incorporating into my interiors that I think people gravitate towards.
So that means you must always be shopping, right?
Never ends.
Never ends.
always shopping. And I've gotten to the point now where it's a relatively small community, and sometimes a salvage dealer will call me directly if they get something like, I'm always looking for flush-mounted lighting. It's very difficult to find good-looking industrial flush-mounted lighting. You can find pendants.
Sure.
Flush fixtures are difficult to find. So I'll get a call or a text message early in the morning, say that they're in the middle of demolishing a building and they've got 40 flush-mounted fixtures to me.
And you rush right over, right?
They'll text me a picture, and sometimes I'll pull the trigger on that.
There you go. Yeah, you got to strike while the iron's hot. Well, so you've touched on the thing that brings you a lot of joy in your work. We know, Dan, in life and in this crazy industry, that things don't always go to plan. Talk to us a little bit about how you navigate the waters when things go wrong in your projects.
One of the difficulties that I've encountered is time management, because I'm wearing so many hats. There are times where I'll be in the city at the D&D buildings sourcing fabric for the interiors when it would be very nice if there were two of me and the other person could be on the job site overseeing the installation of the kitchen cabinetry or the oak flooring so I could determine which board should go in each particular place. So that has been challenging from time to time is the time management. And I've tried to address it by relying heavily upon technology. Mm. I'll do FaceTime with the craftsman on site, or we'll text pictures back and forth. And that's been helpful.
Yeah, that is a good use of those technologies when you can't be there personally.
It really is.
Good call. Good call indeed. So our listeners at home, Dan, are always curious about how to make their homes more beautiful. You're talking to them right now. Give us some tips, some ideas, some thoughts from you on how people at home can avoid mistakes when working on their own homes.
Well, when people are thinking about interiors, lots of times they'll focus solely on the visual experience. And I think it's also important to focus on the tactile experience and to pay attention to those elements in the home that you touch and feel. For example, the doorknobs, the doors themselves, the weight of the doors, or the hardware on the cabinetry, on the cabinetry hardware, or the kitchen faucet, or the basin faucets in the bathrooms. These are the things that you touch and use on a daily basis, and they can greatly influence your experience in a space. So one of the things I like to encourage my clients to do is to invest the money in doors and hardware throughout the house that are substantial, that feel heavy in the hand. And one of the things that you can do if it's not in the budget to replace all of the doors throughout the house and to replace all of the hardware, one thing you can do is repaint. And I'm a huge fan of super saturated colors and jewel tones, very dark, saturated colors in a high gloss paint. Maybe Fine Paints of Europe is one. Mm-hmm. Another is Farrell and Ball. And then Benjamin Moore has the Aura line of paint, which is very high quality. And I would hire the best painter that you can find and repaint all the interior doors in your home in that super high gloss color, and make sure they're hand brushed, not sprayed. And it will do wonders to the interiors of your house.
Wow. What a great practical and beautiful tip. I take it you don't shy away from color then, right?
You know, generally the backdrop of the homes that I design tend to be fairly neutral and monochromatic. They're sort of washed out beach tones, beach colors, the shades of gray and steel blue. But then I like a punch of a dark saturated color, and it's usually either like eggplant or a very dark blue that almost reads black, or a dark green that changes throughout the day with the sun and how it filters into the space. And I typically reserve those colors for ceilings, for a high gloss ceiling, or the interior doors throughout the space, and or accent pieces.
I'm all about that eggplant. That got my attention. So now I'm looking at my doors here thinking, I have to try this.
Eggplant with unlacquered brass is a beautiful combination. I love unlacquered brass because it just gets more beautiful over time.
That patina, there's nothing quite like it. Exactly. That's delicious.
I actually just received the hardware for that house in East Hampton that I was telling you about. And I've already unpacked it so that it could be exposed to the salt air and start to weather.
Get a jump on things.
Yeah.
I like that. Well, let's flip things around for a moment, Dan, and talk a little bit about the place that you call home. Do you have a favorite space in your home? And if so, tell us why.
So I'm actually in the middle of building a house for myself that I designed here in East Hampton. And I think I'm probably most excited about the pool house. It's a structure the design was inspired by the pool cabana at the Faena Hotel in Buenos Aires, Argentina. I saw it many, many years ago, and it was I liked the lines of the structure and the way it was broken down into three separate spaces. That pool cabana had a ladies' room on one side, a men's room side on the other, and then had a bar in the center, which was covered but was an open space. It was open to the elements. What I've done is sort of tweak that design a bit. So one side is now a kitchen. The other side is a changing room and cabana. And the center section is covered outdoor space, which will have a banquette that wraps around three sides of the room. And I'm just really looking forward to using it to entertain. And I'm using reclaimed cedar to sheathe it so that it'll weather really nicely. And those industrial shelving units that I was talking about earlier that I'm incorporating into the client project in East Hampton. I have enough of them where I'm going to use a few in mine as well. I'm just really excited about that part of the house.
Wow, with good reason. Will we see pictures at some point?
Oh, sure. It'll be done in probably June, I'd say.
We'll keep an eye on the website and look forward to seeing those pop up. We'll make sure to post a link to that website in the show notes section so our listeners can click on that and follow all the cool things that you're working on, Dan. What would our listeners be surprised to find walking into your own home, Dan?
I think they would be surprised at the number of vintage industrial step stools that I have throughout the house. I have a bit of an obsession for the stools, and I use them in my projects. I find them useful in a wine room to reach the upper shelves, or in a mud room, even in a kitchen. I'll sometimes use them as a side table if there's a low lounge chair. But I really just like the design and the look, the lines of a short, you know, stool. And I have a lot. Well, some of them I've paid $29 for on eBay, and others have been very, very expensive.
So you don't discriminate then, right?
I don't, no.
That's the way to build a collection. I love it. I love it a lot. Let's think about design or style heroes for a moment, Dan. If you could hang out for an hour or so with a designer style hero, someone, they might be living, they might be deceased, but someone whose work has greatly influenced you, who would you pick and why?
I'd have to say, although he's not an interior designer, I'd have to say Ralph Lauren. And the reason I say that is in part because he's created a global lifestyle brand, which has been so unbelievably successful. I mean, that's impressive in itself. And I'd love to pick his brain about how he achieved that. But on the creative side of things, there's a line that he has under his umbrella that's called Double RL, which was inspired. It's a line of clothing, which was inspired by his ranch, the Double RL ranch in Colorado. And the look of the clothing is really very sort of industrial, and it's Western wear, it's motorcycle jackets, it's military inspired. Whatever he chooses to do, he just kind of nails it every single time. When he's selling, you know, a leather motorcycle jacket, it's perfect. When he's selling cargo pants, it's just, they're absolutely just spot on perfect. So I would love to spend time with him to find out what makes him tick and where he shops. And I'd love a peek in his closet to see the actual vintage garments that inspired the lines that he sells commercially. It's just so impressive.
That would be quite a treat, wouldn't it?
It really would.
Good pick. You couldn't go wrong with an hour or two with Mr. Lauren, that's for sure. Lots of great things happening in your business, Dan. Lots of great growth, beautiful projects. What's out on the horizon? Look down the way a little bit. Maybe it hasn't materialized yet, but talk to us a little bit about what you've got your eye on, maybe working towards, that we can watch for and celebrate with you as it materializes in the future.
Yeah, so I have a couple of more projects on the near-term horizon here in the Hamptons that I'm working on. I've got a beautiful piece of property very close to the golf course, the Maidstone Club in East Hampton, and it's I'm in the process of designing a house for that property, which is going to be a little different than the other homes that I've developed in the area, but I'm really excited about it. And I'm looking to do more projects in LA. So that's something that I look forward to. I found it inspiring to be in a different city, different dealers, different vendors. I still relied upon some of my sources here in New York, but it was gratifying to be in a different city. So that was something that I really looked forward to. And also I'm working on a candle, a scented candle. So that's something to look forward to down the line.
Great. And we can watch the website for that when that launches?
Yes. I'm actually going to be relaunching my website in about a month. I've got did a home for Molly Sims and her husband, Scott Stuber, a film producer out in Los Angeles. And that's going to be in Architectural Digest. It's going to be an editorial, online editorial in March. That's going to be released. And I'm going to relaunch my website contemporaneously with that. So kind of working on that as we speak.
Exciting on all counts. We will keep an eye on the new site, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the online pages of Architectural Digest. Very exciting indeed. Give us the best decorating advice that you've ever come across, Dan.
Now, I'm not even sure where I heard this, but the best, it's hard to say advice because I don't know whether I read it or someone communicated it to me. But I think it's important to spend time in a space before you do anything, before you buy anything, before you create a floor plan, before you create a color palette, just spend time in the space doing absolutely nothing, getting a sense for how the light filters through the space, getting a sense of the flow of the rooms, and just getting an overall vibe from it before you actually design anything. And I've tried to do that not only with my own homes and the projects that I develop for resale, but also with homes that I'm designing for clients. This project that I'm going to be starting in a couple of months, the new construction, I've been to the site numerous times over the last several weeks at different times throughout the day to see how the light hits the property, to get a sense of where should you enter the home, where should the kitchen be located. So I think that's important, whether it's a new construction project or whether it's an interior design job.
Wise words and time well spent. Definitely, definitely time well spent. Give us a design or style trend, Dan, that you've got your eyes on and that you're going to be really happy to see go by the wayside.
That's an easy one. I absolutely loathe a television above a fireplace.
Preaching to the choir here.
I mean, putting aside the aesthetics, I don't think they look all that great. It's not the correct viewing height, right? So it's not comfortable to watch, and I don't think they look great. So it's something that I really try to avoid. I'm not going to say that I've never done it, because there are times where there's just no way around it. I've had clients insist, and I've had situations where it just works. For example, if you have a master bedroom where there's really only one wall where the master, where the king size bed should be placed, and opposite that bed wall is a fireplace, you know, and they want a television, it's kind of a no brainer. So there are times where you have to do it, but it's something that I really try to avoid.
Yeah, I share that sentiment. It is at times unavoidable, but boy, when you can't avoid it, how nice is that?
So nice.
Dan, let's think about your home again for a moment, a hypothetical here. We pray it never happens, but if there were a fire at the house tonight, loved ones, animals, they're all safe. But what's the one object in your home that you would risk the flames to save?
So it's actually a collection of objects. About 18 years ago, I was in Jose Ignacio, Uruguay, on vacation, and I was out hitting the flea markets and the local antique shops, and I stumbled upon a collection of vintage glass jars that I loved. I gravitated towards them. They had these black Bakelite lids on them, and I think there were either six or eight of those jars. And then over the next couple of days, I found a few more jars, and I put together this small collection. And then towards the tail end of the trip, I was sitting on the beach, toes in the sand, and it hit me, I'm going to display a collection of sand in these jars. So from that point forward, every beach that I visited throughout the world, I would smuggle sand back to the U.S. and display them in these little jars. And I just took a little white label and a black Sharpie and write, you know, South of France or Jose Ignacio or, you know, Sarasota, Florida, wherever the sand was from. And it's something that I like looking at it because it brings me back, but it also is just a cool accessory to have in the home. So it took a lot of effort, and I spent a lot of money on vacations to get those sand collections. So that's something I would grab.
Makes perfect sense. And it sounds like a fascinating collection. Good for you. Keep that one up. Are you a book lover, Dan?
I am, although I have to say, most of my research and reading these days is online.
Yeah. So much of it is. If you were to think about, you know, the old-fashioned handheld book concept, give us a book recommendation, something that you think should be on the bookshelf of every design lover who's listening.
Well, speaking of someone whose design business is based in East Hampton, there's a book that I've referred back to time and time again. It's called Houses of the Hamptons. And it's probably more for the architecture enthusiasts than the design enthusiasts, but it's a really good glimpse into the turn of the century architecture of the East End of Long Island. There's some really beautiful homes.
It's a marvelous book.
Most of those homes are not standing still, but it's a really a fun read. On the design side of things, there's a book. Roman and Williams did a book a couple of years ago. I can't remember the name of it. I think it's called like Things We Made or something similar to that. And it's a book that I've referred to a number of times because they share my love for vintage industrial objects.
Right. No, that's a good fit for you. I too cannot remember the name of their book, although I've seen it. We'll do some research and we'll post links to both of those books in the show notes section so that our listeners can click on those and add them to their library if they don't already have them. Good recommendations, both of them. Dan, we're down to the last question. You ready for this one?
I think so.
We finish every show with the same question. So let me paint a picture and then get your thoughts. Imagine you woke up tomorrow morning in a brand new world. It's physically identical to the Earth that you know, but you don't know a single soul. You still have all the experience and the knowledge you currently possess. Your food and shelter are taken care of, but your new home is empty. All you have is a laptop, a mobile phone, and about $1,000 in your pocket. What would you do over the next 7 days to begin to decorate your new home?
So I think I'd heed my own advice, and I'd spend the first 3 or 4 days just getting a sense of the vibe of the space. I'd spend time there seeing how the light filters through, how the rooms flow from one to the other. And then after maybe 3 or 4 days, I'd venture out and I'd start getting to know the local community and visit the coffee shops and the dealer, the antiques dealers, and if there's a salvage yard or salvage shop nearby, I would certainly want to visit that establishment. And that would help sort of drive my initial design thoughts on how the space should be finished.
Would be a good place to start, that's for sure.
Yeah.
A very thoughtful approach, I would say. Dan Scotti, thank you so much for your time today.
James, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
This has been a great joy getting to chat with you, getting to know about you and the work that you do. We want to say thanks to our subscribers for tuning in to the show today, too. None of this has any meaning if it's not for you. So thanks for tuning in, for telling your friends about the show and helping us to grow. Bounce over to the website, milliondollardecorating.com, where you can catch the notes from today's show. We'll post a link to Dan's website so you can follow all the great things that he's got going on. Also, keep your eye on the site. In about a month, he'll be relaunching. It'll be a totally new look, and I know you want to check that out. We'll post links to the two books, Houses of the Hamptons, and then a wonderful volume by Roman and Williams. Check those out. Add them to your library. I know that you will be appreciative of Dan's recommendations. While you're on our site, click a few buttons. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. And finally, and most importantly, remember that it's up to you to make your world more beautiful.